Welcome to a Weird News Roundup presented by Odyssey's Something Offbeat podcast. We dive into strange tales covered by Odyssey's radio newsrooms from coast to coast. I'm your Roundup host, Lauren Berry, and this week's episode is all about flying. First, we've got Brits coming across the pond to hang out at the honky-tonk in Texas and catch a World Cup game or two. And we've got a baby eagle recovering from a dangerous fall. Then, we'll hear about termites buzzing around a historic site linked to vampires, as well as an all-female airplane race that's taking to the skies. That's a lot to get to, so let's start up our propellers. Our first destination is the Dallas-Fort Worth area. It recently welcomed travelers from Croatia and England who touched down in the Lone Star State for the World Cup. It's also where Mike Rogers and Austin York of the Mid-Morning Mic Check from Odyssey Station KRLD 1080 in Dallas spoke to one of those Brits. Now, have you ever seen 10,000 British people walking around in cowboy hats? Yeah, me neither. Here's Mike Rogers, who's actually the host of our original Something Offbeat interview episodes, with one of these cowboy hat-wearing guests from the UK this Tuesday.
Happens to be a friend of mine, Joe Messino. Joe's with us on the KRLD. Hey, Joe, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Hey, we're doing okay. Joe is...
Have you drank anything yet, Joe?
Not yet. We're on our way to a bar in Arlington. We've just got a view of the stadium from the Uber.
Oh, isn't it a glorious sight?
Yeah, it looks great.
Tell me, what bar are you going to?
It's called Texas Live, I think.
We're very familiar with it.
We've heard of it.
It's quite big. Just remember that.
Joe and his family, you guys, you've been staying in Fort Worth, and you're pulling, we can tell from the accent, you're going to be pulling hard for the English team.
Yes.
Also,
we've been staying in Fort Worth last night. There were tons of England fans going around with cowboy hats on. We went to the honky-tonk. Everyone's having a great time.
How was that? What did you think of that?
It was good fun. It was really cool. And then they were gracious enough to put some England football songs on at the end, and we all sort of sung along the dance floor.
Wasn't there one about drinking beer, let me drink all the beer, or something like that?
Yeah, that one. And then the classic, it's coming home, Three Lions song.
Now, that's the thing. The English team, you're also known as the Three Lions, right? That's because of the crest on the front of the jersey?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay. And your family, you guys, you're following them across the country, right? Because their next two matches, I think, are Boston and New York City, right?
We are. So, yeah, we'll do Boston and New York, and then we'll follow them as long as they go through the tournament. So we've got tickets that go until they got knocked out or until they win.
Wow.
So we might be all over the place.
How are you showing your support? What are you wearing today?
We've all got England shirts on and cowboy hats to celebrate Texas.
Perfect. All right, now, how many strong are you going to bring in there? I'm hearing there's probably going to be more English fans in Croatia there at the stadium.
I would imagine so. I don't know. Dad, how many fans do you reckon there are England fans coming here today? At least 10,000, something like that.
Oh, nice. Okay, so you got quite a showing.
Yeah.
Probably a lot more than that. Right. You enjoying your stay here in Texas? Yeah, and I know you hit the honky-tonk.
We've only been for one day so far, but we've been having an absolute ball. It's been great.
How about the food?
The Stampede and before. Yeah, I had a 32-ounce steak yesterday and one more.
There you go. You got to get that.
That's a two-pounder.
I saw some video of some English fans enjoying the Fort Worth Rodeo. Did you get any view of that? What did you think of that?
We might go later, I think. We went to the honky-tonk last night instead, but maybe the rodeo tonight.
Joe, do me a favor. Hand the phone over to your dad. I want to talk Gordon for a second.
All right. Well, I'll put him on. 1 second.
All right.
This is the guy that's funding this operation.
Correct.
Hello.
Gordon, this is Mike Rogers. Good to hear your voice again.
Hey,
how are you?
How are you? Yeah, good. Good. Thanks.
So we're doing great. Now, as I said, Joe, your son and my daughter are friends. They're actually co-workers in New Zealand.
Yes, I remember. I know Maggie very well. So
we met 3 years ago, actually, at a Super Bowl party in New Zealand.
I'll
go ahead and say it. You were pulling for the Eagles.
Yes, indeed.
Well, we can't have that kind of talk around here.
Now, we're not going to hold that against you. Tell me this. I remember that day. You drank me under the table. Are you getting a good start today?
Well, we're heading to this bar, so we'll have a couple of beers before the game.
Are any of our listeners fans of the Auburn University War Eagle? I have to admit that I just learned about it while watching TikToks about the World Cup game held at Auburn Stadium. I was a little surprised by this, but watching an eagle fly around a football stadium can really make an American girl like me feel patriotic. Eagles are, of course, an important national symbol for the U.S., and they're beloved here. When an eaglet, that's a baby eagle, was recently injured in Michigan when its nest collapsed, the North Sky Raptor Sanctuary in Interlaken stepped in to make sure it would be okay. Caitlin Bonnet of the Sanctuary joined Beth Fisher of Odyssey Station WWJ News Radio in Detroit to provide an update on how the eaglet, whose name is Snow, was doing this Tuesday.
And how is Snow doing?
Snow is progressing exactly how we would have hoped. So we're very excited to see him hit those milestones in his medical journey.
And what have his injuries been?
Yeah, so Snow came down when his nest collapsed, unfortunately. One of the supporting branches broke, and we were actually able to be notified by the property owner ahead of time and get a rescue team kind of assembled should the rest of the nest fall. So we were fortunate enough to be able to be on property within like 22 minutes to go and get Snow into care. He's been in our care for about 14 days. When we collected him, we did discover that he had an ulna fracture on one side, on one of his wings, and then a carpal fracture on the other. And the carpal fracture takes a little bit longer to heal because there's a lot more movement in that area. As you can imagine, at the end of the wings, they have finger bones and hand bones just like us. And that's one of the ones that he fractured, and he is recovering great, so much so that at his recheck on Monday morning, the medical team took those pictures, and then we had a vet team take a peek at it, and they approved his bandage removal. So not only can he continue healing and he's hitting those markers, he actually is bandage-free as of right now, which is very exciting. All his splints and bandages have been removed.
And I know you were a little concerned about his breathing. How is that doing?
Yeah, so we did notice he had some labored breathing, and we noticed some cloudiness in part of one of his x-rays previously. We got him on a breathing treatment, and we have not been able, or we have not been able to duplicate that respiratory stress. So the breathing treatment and the medication to clean that up is doing its job, and we couldn't be happier.
And how's his attitude?
So, With healing and with babies growing up, just like with people, they start to develop personalities and a little bit of attitude, especially when they're feeling better. And Snow is absolutely starting to develop those things. So even though he was still supposed to be in bandages over the weekend, he decided that he was not going to be in bandages over the weekend. And as soon as those bandages would get applied, you'd know later, come back for a second round of feeding, and he had removed them all. So he's perking up. He's starting to have some behaviorally appropriate and developmentally appropriate behaviors and exhibiting those, which, while it does make our jobs a little bit more difficult to keep him safe during this healing process, it is a really good sign for him developmentally. So we'll take those in stride.
And do you expect he'll be able to return to the area where his parents, Harry and Harriet, are?
That is a great question. We have teams of ecological professionals and wildlife professionals and veterinary professionals all working together to determine what his best case scenario is. And frankly, we don't know yet. So we want to make sure that we set Snow up for success, whatever that looks like. And while emotionally it would be amazing from a human perspective to get him back with his parents, that may not be the correct choice for him developmentally. So we're taking every day at a time, making sure that with all of the professionals' input, working together to find the best solution for him, just because I don't know and we don't know if by the time he's able to go back out, if his parents will recognize him again. So we have to play our cards the way that we're dealt. So we're working on his medical treatment right now and being very focused on that, but also keeping in mind and having those conversations about if he hits this milestone at this time, what that might look like. If, you know, it's a little bit longer, what, you know, those options are. So it's very fluid. And just like with human medicine, It's a whole lot of it depends. We are making contingency plans for contingency plans just to make sure that he gets the best possible opportunities when those circumstances arise.
And are you optimistic he'll be able to fly?
Our vet team is excited about his healing process. We do think that he'll be able to fly, but we don't know what that flight capacity will look like until he is in a conditioning area where he can demonstrate that. So, yes, we are extremely hopeful. All things point that direction.
When we come back from the break, we'll hear about how New Orleans is dealing with termites moving into a property once owned by Interview with the Vampire author Anne Rice. We'll also hear about the more welcome sight of women pilots taking flight here on this Weird News Roundup from Odyssey's Something Offbeat podcast. Thank you for listening to this special presentation of Weird News from Odyssey's Something Offbeat. St. Elizabeth's in New Orleans, Louisiana, was first built as a boarding school in 1865, and then it became an orphanage in the 1870s. The family of Anne Rice, author of the popular Vampire Chronicles novels that have been made into movies and TV shows, bought the property in 1993. Under the Rices' ownership, the Napoleon Avenue property was home to her collection of 2,000 dolls and her famous Lestat Halloween parties, named after one of the characters from her books. St. Elizabeth's was then converted into condominiums in 2005. This week, the property was hidden under a tent for the city's largest ever dry wood fumigation project. There weren't vampires flitting around the property this time, but termites that feed off wood cellulose like Rice's characters feed off human blood. Joe Martin is a board-certified entomologist and the owner of Terminix. He joined Tommy Tucker out of Odyssey Station WWL in New Orleans to discuss the project this week.
And we had a big dry wood termite fumigation, which dry wood termites are different than the swarming termites that we see around the lights. So a lot of people see these tents and they say, oh, it's yeah, Formosan termites. Mm-hmm. Usually when you see a big tent like that, it's for dry wood termites.
First of all, we're going to need a bigger tent. That's the first thing I thought when I saw these pictures. What goes on inside of that tent? What goes on in that process, Joe?
So, first off, dry wood termites are a little different. They live in the dry wood. They hop from house to house, okay, Tommy? Mm-hmm. So they're not coming from the ground. So after a methodical process of treating them, we opt to go to a fumigation. So first, we have to measure the house. We measure by cubic feet. This project was around 1.2 million cubic feet. We have to measure tarps. We have to get these big tarps on the roof, seal the building. We have gas entry lines that we shoot the gas into the house, probably put around over 100 fans in the house to spread the gas in simple terms. And we measure gas per cubic foot to get the kill target for these dry wood termites. And that's really in a simple way to try to put it, that we're gassing the house to kill the dry wood termites inside the wood, because they're not coming from the ground. They're living in the woods. So that's the only way we can penetrate the wood is through this gas.
How effective is this tenting procedure when it comes to that?
So fumigation is 100% elimination against dry wood termites. Now, thing about dry wood termites is there's no preventative treatment. So dry wood termites can fly back into your house or your neighbor's house.
Wait. Hang on. Say what?
Yes. Yeah. When you kill dry wood termites, there's no preventative treatment after for dry wood termites. They are not subterranean termites where you could treat the ground. They're living in attics, in dry, unfinished wood in our historic homes. So you maybe could treat your house or maybe do something or spot treat it, but your neighbor has drywood termites, the drywood termites can fly right back in. So they're very difficult to control. And that's why we see so many tents, or you see so many, you know, coffee grinds of drywood termites when you start looking around at our historic structures.
If you were to build a home, would you use wood or would you use some kind of metal framing?
Oh, I would use wood. I mean, metal framing works, Tommy, but hey, yeah, sheetrock is made of cellulose. Your roof rafters are wood. I mean, you can't get away from using wood in a house. And a lot of people will say, oh, well, I have a brick house. Well, there's a lot of cellulose in the house, and the termites are going to find cellulose in the house. There's a lot of things made of cellulose. And really, we built our houses on top the termites' territory. So they're just doing their thing and invading our homes.
As Martin works to save the historic residents, female pilots are getting ready to take part in a bit of history themselves. The 2,500-mile Air Race Classic, an all-women cross-country air race that was first held in 1929. Janae Willard is participating in the race as part of the team Shenanigans with her co-pilot Julia Rue. Willard joined Dana Wright of the Dana and Parks Show out of Odyssey Station KMBZ in Kansas City to talk all about it.
So remind me, this is your fifth last race. And I laughed out loud when you said, because you always say, I'm going to retire. Right. This is the last race.
Right, right.
This is your fifth last race.
Right. I have flown. This will be my 11th national or international air race. But in 2019, there was a race through the U.S. and Canada. And I said, told my husband, because I hadn't raced for a while, I said, I got to race one last time. I've never raced through Canada. I've raced through the Caribbean, raced through Mexico. I've never raced through Canada. I said, this will be my last race. So I raced in 2019. And then, of course, I got the bug again. Yep. And then the race stopped for a couple years for COVID. And then I thought, I better race. I own an airplane. What am I doing? If I got an airplane, I'm not racing. I mean,
right.
Become a, you know, old grandma sitting at home. You know?
You are definitely not that, Janae. I want to remind everybody, you are, for those of you who don't know, and we have people all over the world listening to this interview right now, because the pilot community is a tight-knit community. And you are a well-known Lee's Summit pilot. You are a flight instructor. This is the 49th Air Race Classic. And by the way, it is the oldest airplane race of its kind in the entire United States. 100 women pilots, 46 teams, 9 stops, 2,700 miles. How does it work?
Well, the way it works is everybody goes up with like a check pilot, and you handicap your plane so that different types of aircraft can race against each other. There are 4 days. We can only fly in the daytime.
Okay.
And we can only fly in relatively good weather. There are 9 cities across the country that we have to fly by at 200 to 400 feet, full throttle. It's full throttle air race. And once we get our time, we can stop at that city, we can stay overnight, we can refuel, get some lunch, take a look at the weather. But we have from Tuesday morning until 5 o'clock Friday to finish the 2,700 miles. So theoretically, the faster planes might get done in 3 days, the slower planes might get done in 4 days. But if they do better than their handicap, they might actually beat us. So
there are 9 legs to this journey. Tell people where you're going to be flying this time.
Okay, we're going to fly all through the Midwest. It actually starts and ends in Illinois, believe it or not, over by St. Louis. It's called West looks Alton,
like a,
Illinois.
Almost looks like a Pentagon.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So it's really a pretty good route. The only mountains we have to cross are the Smokies, which are not real high. Last year, crossed the Rockies. Mm-hmm. So this year, I'm going to be taking some oxygen with me just in case we decide we can get better winds up high, because the strategies are, what time of day do you fly? What headwinds do you have? What tailwinds do you have? What's the best time to do this? Do I want to wait till tomorrow and try to do more legs tomorrow than today? So there's a whole lot of different strategies that people employ to try to win.
So tell me about your mama. For those people who do not, I love this story. You were actually taught to fly by your mother over 50 years ago. So think about what did the United States look like 50 years ago? Your mother was a pilot. She wasn't a secretary.
Right.
She wasn't a nurse. Those were noble professions. But that was rare.
That was very, very unusual. And she was actually an old Powder Puff Derby pilot. Before the Air Race Classic, they had a longtime women's air race called the Powder Puff Derby. It was always transcontinental, West Coast to East Coast, because that's the way the winds went. And everybody just knew they flew east. There was no GPS, none of that stuff.
Nope.
She taught me to fly and took me on my first international air race in 1973. It went through Mexico and up through the United States. And then I went as her co-pilot as a very, very low private pilot. And then I also went a second air race through the U.S. and down into the Caribbean with her in 77. Then I took a break from flying, had three babies. Now I'm back. I guess I'm at the end now.
I love it so much. You've never really known your life without an airplane in it.
I was very blessed. We grew up with a plane. My dad was a pilot. He was an attorney by profession, but he had a plane. My mother learned to fly in case something happened to him, because there were four kids in the family.
That's right. Yeah. She learned in case, she said, case I need to know what to do in case something happens to you.
Yeah, in case something happened to him, and she was in the front seat. She needed to know how to land the plane. And then all these guys were coming back from Vietnam, so the flight school had her switch to the right seat and start teaching all these Vietnam vets. And then she flew a race, and I flew back to commercially to meet her, and she put me in the plane, and she said, I'm tired. I'm going to go to sleep. You fly. You hold this heading. Head west. Yeah. All my life I'd been in the back seat, like, I hate to say it, but getting sick. And when I realized I needed to be in the front seat, I need to be flying the plane. I haven't gotten sick since then, you know.
I have never felt safer or more alive than when I was with you.
Thank you so much for listening to this Weird News Roundup presented by Odyssey's Something Offbeat podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to the Mid-Morning Mic Check out of KRLD 1080 in Dallas, WWJ News Radio in Detroit, Tommy Tucker out of WWL in New Orleans, and the Dana and Parks Show out of KMBZ in Kansas City. You can find all of these programs, including the Something Offbeat podcast, on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.